Blog Talk Radio.
No, we'll never fall away. No, we'll never. One thing I can always be sure of. Fall away. No, we'll never. I promise of the day.
I hope tomorrow will bring better you, better me. I know that we'll show this world we've got more we could be. So you should never give up on your hope and your dreams. You gotta get up, get into it and get it on. To be strong, if we try, we can fly to a whole other place. All we need is a leap and a smile on our face. We can go anywhere we want, any role we decide to play. And we're never, never, never too far from tomorrow today.
Can you hear me, co-host Lisa?
I can hear.
Okay. See, we're going to have to operate this way tonight because apparently my control box just went to sleep, but I still can load you in. Can I get a little test from you one more time? Can I hear your voice again? Because it was kind of low.
Can you hear?
Yes.
Hello?
Bring it up. Yeah, I'm hearing you. Can you hear me?
I can hear.
Okay, awesome. We're going to have a, we were planning such an awesome night tonight. We were going to be on technology, and we was excited. And here we have this problem where we cannot connect like we need to connect. She sent a couple requests to me, and somehow the request's not showing up. But we're going to make sure we still have a great show. We can't, progress keep going. Like I said, it's Marvelous Monday, and for some of you, it's the beginning of the work week. And for others, I see she had dropped off. I wanted to call back. At least I want you to call back. She had dropped off, and we want to make sure we can continue to have an awesome show tonight. I am actually talking through my my secondary phone tonight, so we're going to still do what we need to do. The title of tonight's show is Mental Health of Children, Parents, and Caretakers During COVID-19. The call-in number to be a part of the show is 347-857-4192. We want you to press 1 if you want to be a part of the show and share your thoughts. At least I do have you back again. So
you
should
be
able. Yeah, I have you and I hear you well. So you don't have to hang
okay.
up anymore. I have you right now. Okay, so the call-in number again is 347-857-4192. Our web link is www.blogtalkradio.com. The Smith Way Production. That's a slash of Smith Way Production. The email, if you want to just email the show, is talkingreal2you@gmail.com. You can tweet the show at talkingreal2you, as well as at Lorenzo D. Smith 15, at coach_L_Smith. Also, we have several other co-hosts or team members that join us, and as they call in, I'll make sure we share our thoughts. Matter of fact, I see another one on here tonight. I'm going to see if she wants to be live with us tonight. Thank you so much. As soon as this is Dr. O. You join us tonight, Dr. O.
Good evening. I'd like to listen tonight, if at all possible, sir.
It's always possible. You can add something in. I'm going to kind of keep you live so you'll kind of know on the other end. If you want to just jump in, you can jump right in or use the process of pressing 1 and I'll make sure I identify. So we look to have an awesome show tonight. We look to have also Scarlett Black joining us in a little bit, as well as Lauren D. Smith and Cameron Gimmer. We hope each and every one of them call us and we'll make sure we make them live. Those are the team members. Now, this is the only father and daughter blog talk show in the country that focuses on energetic conversation about just plain old life issues. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight, just plain old life issues. So we plan to have an awesome night. We're going to look at mental health and the mental well-being of children, parents, caretakers, and caregivers during this COVID-19. One of the topics we hadn't talked about is caregivers. So we want to take an opportunity to kind of talk about each one of those areas. Now, we're going to start off with the opportunity. Look like my thing have dropped, my episode and dropped, so I may not be, and I don't want to close out on this right here, but I do want to make sure it keeps saying that I have to call in again as a whole. I'm not connected, so I have to call in as a host. So I just want you to kind of bear with me, team. We're going to play a little music, kind of get it going. Then I'm going to call back in, and I'm going to be on the board so I can control the board. Right now I couldn't control the board, so now I have an opportunity to control the board, and I'm going to try to direct connect as we talk and speak. So just bear with us for a second. It's going to make a few sounds here. That way you can get your thoughts together in regards to the children, the parents, caretakers, and caregivers. Just give yourself an opportunity to kind of think about that, and we're going to have an awesome time tonight. While you're doing that, I want us to take a longer than a minute of silence in regards to why the connection is done in regards to John Robert Lewis, our congressman for the state of Georgia, as well as an icon for civil rights. We want to make sure we give him
on
the
your show now. Press 1 to hear important instructions.
So,
since it appears you're calling back into a live show, we are reconnecting you now.
So what
now.
On the one we need to be on, so it's good here. But as I was saying about John Lewis, it's my condolence to the family. Not only is condolence to the family, because it's just a part in regards to he's a part of the organization I'm a part of, and it's part of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. For over 30 years, he served in Congress, but he's been in the organization much longer than that. As we said, he has departed. He had ran a good race and fought a good fight. He's now on his way to Omega Chapter, which is always be a member of our fraternity. And we have to take a moment to offer our condolences. I want you to do it. A lot of people have done it on Facebook, and that's just awesome to see people to be able to do it. So I'm real excited by having an opportunity just to take this moment because he's inspiration. When you think about Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama, and he's the leader of it. Think about the Civil Rights March in Washington, D.C., right along with Dr. Martin Luther King. He was right there as a 23-year-old young man. We're so happy to have an icon like that. We hate to lose an icon, but as he said, you know, whether you're in trouble, you can call it good trouble, never bad trouble, and that's what it's all about. So speak up. Let's make changes as John would ask us to do, my brother of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. Again, just want to take a 30-second break in regards to that 30-second silence dealing with the loss of a true icon, civil rights icon, and a member, truly a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. He's a distinguished service person at the highest chapter you can get in Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. And again, just 30 seconds. Thank you. Again, thank you so much, and we want you to be conscious. You know, we have to be people of conscience, and we have to work hard to make sure we make change. Whatever you can do, whoever you are, you can make changes. And that's what John says, good being good trouble. And that's what it's all about. All right, let's move forward with our topic tonight is mental health, a mental well-being of children, parents, caretakers / caregivers during coronavirus pandemic of COVID-19. We want to talk about school reopening, and I know down in South Florida, a lot is happening in South Florida. One of the things I think was noticeable, and I said something about it earlier, it was in regards to where I am, and as being a member of the National Education Association, as a longtime educator, retired educator, and also working on a college level at this time. I said that for changes, really have to be, and the notice have to be your education association, where your teachers and your administrators and your workers have to say something. And Florida Education Association said something. They filed a lawsuit. Man, they don't feel like it's safe to go back to school. And I know everybody kind of look at it and said, well, what are we going to do with our young people? But we have to realize, I was listening to some data today, and it's a total of 100, you know, where we thought it could not infect our children. We had 1,180 children from 2 months up until 4 years old being infected with COVID-19. Then for our 10 through 19, which again, we didn't think it could infect them. I heard some kind of, I won't be facetious and disrespectful, however you want to call it, but stupid today about you can go to school and then you catch it, then you can go home. And that was said by a governor.
Said
so I'm very concerned with people thinking that, But from the ages of 10 to 19, we're having a large number of individuals been infected by COVID-19. It's being transferred. They said more of transfer. So that means they've been infected. They don't know they're infected, and they'll walk around transferred. Mm-hmm. So that brings a lot of concerns about reopening schools. A lot of the counties I know I can call
Absolutely.
Off have decided. I know in Alabama we have two counties that are, and it's others, saying they're going to do the first 9 weeks with remote learning. I know everybody criticized it. I didn't think they was prepared for it back in March. They really wasn't for March and May, but they had time to get prepared for it. But we're talking about safety. This is going to always be my hashtag, One Life Matters. I don't care what people think. We can't do no herding of individuals so all of them can catch coronavirus so we can get over it. We can't sit around and wait on right now making a decision on whether it's going to be some kind of something to immune out young people, old people, whoever, middle class, whatever you want to say, people of wisdom. We can't do this. We can't take chances with life. But Lisa, if you want to add to that, because you can kind of share, and I'm going to share more about what's happening.
I mean, that governor in Missouri should be ashamed of himself for even saying kids can get it and then go home and get better. And you don't even know who's at home. Like, you got multiple family members in one home. I can't even imagine somebody saying it's okay for a kid to get sick. That's disturbing in itself. I feel like, and I've been watching the news because I want to be updated, or I'm trying to read and keep updated on all these things. But even today, DeSantis got, there were hecklers. I think he was unnerved. You've got this lawsuit. You've got problems in Miami. I don't know if you saw, they're arresting people in Miami. There's still protesting going on. I mean, and I guess what's, you know, and I've said this before, it's so disturbing to me that we can't work together and just try to get through this. And I'm trying to think in my head, you know, I'm upset, you're upset, you know, we're all upset. And I'm wondering if people are reacting on emotion and that's why they're doing some of this. You know, their anxiety's so bad, it's cabin fever, mental illness. A lot of people have mental illnesses. A lot of people have substance abuse problems. So I'm trying to put it into perspective and look at the whole picture of the behavior. Because if you watch some of this behavior, it just doesn't seem appropriate. And then our kids are watching this. And I've said it before, that TikTok, I can't stand TikTok. They're watching these videos of people being violent and fighting and attacking one another, and this is not what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be a united front, guys. And it's very upsetting. And then I think when people are seeing this themselves, they're getting more worked up and upset. And we have to come together, whether we agree or disagree. We can agree. What is it? We can agree to disagree, but we have to work together. And the longer this goes on, I think they're going to shut us down. I'm pretty sure of it. I think Miami's got 23,000 cases right now. They said the ERs are not filled. I don't know if it's true or not. I'm not sure what to think at this point. But if this keeps going in the wrong direction, guys, we're never going to fully reopen. Economically, we're not going to be where we need to be. These poor children, which is breaking my heart, and I cried the other day. I haven't really cried since all this happened, but I'm going to be honest with everyone. I cried. I cried for the kids. I cried for my niece and nephew, my friend's kids. I usually go home in August. I can't even go home. So, you know, this is impacting everybody, but these children, the longer they are not in school and the longer that we keep up this behavior, they're not going to be in school and they're going to be uneducated and they're going to be scared to go back to school. You got a whole population there of children and teachers and parents. They're going to be scared to go back out or go back to school. And these kids were behind already. You know, several of my kids said, well, they just uploaded the work. You know, there was no one even online, you know, to teach. And, you know, I don't know whether that's true or not. This is just things that they were telling me. They were struggling. A lot of kids are in tutoring now, but the longer this runs on, the longer we will not get back to where we need to be. And I keep saying there's not going to be the way things used to be. Unfortunately, we have to be in the moment. We have to go day by day, and we just need to follow the rules. And I actually had my mask on, Dr. Lowe. I was going to put my Captain America mask on. I'll have to take a picture. But have fun with the mask, even if you don't like a mask. I got superheroes masks because I love superheroes when I teach yoga. But, guys, let's try. Let's try to be united and try to work through this. And I know some – and I respect everyone's opinion, like I always say, but this is pretty serious. And it's kind of scary when you're watching this, the COVID, the violence, and all these different factors going on. And we have an election coming up. It's just – so many things at one time, and I think people are on overload right now mentally, and you got people trapped in the house too. I know there's parents struggling. I try to check in on the parents I work with to make sure they're okay. And that's something I really want to stress to everyone. Send a text, guys. Send an emoji checking in. I love you. You need anything? Do nice things like that. I think it can be helpful. So that's what my thought is on all this.
And that's awesome.
I think,
because this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with truth now.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things we have, I think, everybody trying to mask the truth to make it fit them. We're dealing with a situation where we're dealing with a virus that is completely out of control. And the point is, especially in America, is due to being commutable more so than any other form. And it's because the lack of belief, I think is that for me, and I'm going to speak on my behalf. I think if you don't fear something, then you have a tendency to go out right in front. That's like, I don't fear that bus.
Right.
I can ride that bus. Or I don't fear this. I'll walk. If fear comes in a different form, what you have to do is make sure you understand. When you're not only talking about your life, it's fine if you're talking about your life, but if you contract this and can carry it home, like we're saying, the ones that are the biggest carriers now are from the ages of 10 to 19 years old. And they don't even have an idea. They feel good because they're healthy. Their testosterone is level there. The strength level. Everything is high now because they're in that age, but they're carrying it home to their family members. That's what the concern, that's what fear ought to be. The fear that you're going to carry, you don't want them to be scared to do anything. You want them to understand that, to be responsible enough that we're not going to infect everybody else in the house. You know, we have who contracted it, and she ended up, you know, her husband was infected, one of her children out of the four were infected, other three wasn't, but, you know, She don't even know where she contracted, but you took it home. And at one time he wasn't doing very well up there. That's just from talk, you know, you never know everything. But the point is, it attacks us different. And we got to understand that because you're 10 to 19 years old, you don't feel nothing. It's inside of you.
I think they're invincible, some of these kids. And I was reading a story, Dr. Love, about a family in Lauderdale, and I guess it's a divorced family. So there's a stepmom and the dad, and I think there's other kids in the house. And the one child, young adult in his 20s, he was just going out partying and doing what he wanted to do. Comes home with a cough. I mean, now the father is in the hospital. He gave it to everyone in the house. And the mom and the stepmom said, now I'm the bad guy because she wants to make it known, please don't do this. And I think it's a huge issue. I know it's down here. There's gangs having parties. There's been COVID parties. There's house parties. So then I think, well, if they do lock us down again, what's going to be the point? Because you got everybody having parties. They think it's okay. It is not okay. If they are telling us do not be in a group of more than, 6 to 10 people, then we shouldn't be doing it. You know, if you're in a store, walk the other way. If the store is crowded, leave, you know, whatever it is. But having these parties and thinking like you're invincible, they're saying that there's less death and less hospitalization, but it's the point. You know, you're out in the streets, down at the beach. You know, there's all sorts of things going on down here. I've been reading up on more stories on how this is affecting people, but it just seems like the younger generation, this millennials, you know, they don't have they think they're invincible. Nobody's invincible. Nobody.
Not even.
And you just
not
think about your parents.
Not anymore. You're not. You're not. And that's the thing about it. And we're talking about reopening.
Not invincible.
And I tell everybody, if you're going to reopen the school, have a plan. Have a plan.
Yeah, they don't have a plan either.
You cannot accommodate financially the plan. Do not open the school. I keep saying there are systems around the capital city of Alabama, which is Montgomery, have chosen to use the first 9 weeks so they can kind of work through remote learning. I understand children need to be there. Under the
American
says, but you got to understand what you're dealing with. The thought, like a governor would say today, just send them to school, and if they get infected, then they can't go to the hospital. They just go back home. Now they back at home. Now they're infecting somebody possibly in their family. If you know, if not several members of the family. So what kind of thinking is that? So the schools are not, they're not sanitized well enough. They are not in condition to function when we don't have a pandemic. I know several schools in this particular district that schools are probably 100 years old. Those schools still, you know, still have windows, broken windows, have things they're not fitting to be there. When it's cold, the kids are freezing. When it's hot, they're sweating like crazy. When you put children in there, when you know from the ages of 10 to 19 that are carriers, some systems in there are not going to be fitting. If it's not the students, it's going to be the teachers. If it's not the teachers, it's going to be the classified or support staff. If it's not, it's going to be the district. It's going to be somebody infected that's may not make it out. So let's be able to have a little bit more thought process. As much as we think about
put a better plan together.
You know, a plan that's going to focus. When I heard earlier when they was talking about football season in 100 days, this was back in April or whatever, in May, but we ain't went through 100 days of this pandemic yet. And you're talking about 100 days of football. Let's spend that time instead of worrying about playing a football, throwing a pigskin around, giving a plan, thinking how we're going to put our children, how we're going to put our teachers, how we're going to put our support staff, how we're going to put our administrators in a better position. But on top of that, our parents can be comfortable enough that there's a plan in place. So when they send their children to school, their children have a chance of survival. This is what we're talking about, the pros and cons of reopening schools when you have some districts and some states that we're going to push it down to the LEAs. And a lot of these LEAs don't have enough to operate with. You have right here the capital, Montgomery, this district, only operating on 10 meals. And that's only 10 meals, that's the lowest, the minimum. You can't operate dealing with 8,000 students, and you got a small amount of tax meal. Now they want to increase, but we can't wait till they get increased. We still got to deal with what kind of plan. Is it blending? Is it going to be remote? Is it going to be face to face? What are you going to do at this point? Because I know these schools ain't been sanitized. I know these schools haven't been clean like they're supposed to be clean. Some of them got some stuff in there over 100 years old. They're so deep rooted in the foundation of some of these schools. No matter what you come in and spray, it's not going to take it away, because if it gets deep rooted, get in the cringes of everything, it's going to be there. What are we willing to do? What do we really want to do? Do we just want to get our children out of the house so we don't have to, you know, we know that as American preacher said, it's going to be good social, it's going to be good educational bump. Yes, it is. But you know what? It's time.
Yes, but.
Education only work when all stakeholders, and I'm going to say this, and I always do this, when all stakeholders take part. It seems like the only stakeholder we want to take part in education is the student. You have parents, you have teachers, you have administrators, you have community, you have everybody needs to be to raise and train this child. And the problem what coronavirus pandemic brought out, everybody wasn't doing their job. And it showed when our young people were put in a situation that we had no plan to teach them when we was not in school face to face. This is what we're talking about. Those are the pros and cons.
You know what, Dr. Lowe?
Lisa, let me give you the number. 347-897-4192. Press 1. And let's make sure you be a part of this conversation. I will identify you with the last 4 digits of your cell or telephone number. Then I'll just ask you to give your name and location, then offer your expertise. This is what it's all about. To be a part of it. Yes, I'm going to drive it home. I'm going to drive it hard about education because education has been all part of my life over 50-some years, but I'm seeing that we hadn't done what we're supposed to do. And I accept the reality that now it's time that coronavirus pandemic made us stand up and look and do some study on what we need to do better. Okay, Lisa.
What I was going to say is they've had since March to try to put a plan together because we knew that this wasn't just going to go away. And I mean, you got to look at things like the sinks in the bathroom. Do the sinks work when you push the things down on the sink? They only run about 5 seconds. They need to run 20 seconds. Are the toilets operating? What are you going to do about water fountains? Here's some of my thoughts for what it's worth. Have the teachers switch classrooms, keep the kids in the classroom. And maybe just figure a way out to move them out, like for art and PE and music, because they do need their specials. Figure a way how you rotate that out. Get the kids tablets. You get the protectors on the tablets, and you don't have to carry the books around. Don't have to have pencils. I'm not saying this is permanent. I'm just thinking of solutions on how to clean things up a bit, because, we see what kids do. They put their pencils in their mouth. They do this. They wipe their nose here. You know, even with the mask, kids will pull the masks up over their eyes, we have to have ways of teaching the kids how to be in the classroom. We have to find ways of taking the stress off the teachers to do everything, and who's going to come in? I feel they should come in during the day and sanitize out, clean out, especially after lunchtime. Things get dropped on the floor, food falls, all sorts of things happen. But you have to put all of this into perspective. Wipe the desks down. We don't know what's being done or cleaned up, but these are just some thoughts I had. That way they're not carrying as much around. They're not moving room to room. But then you got the whole busing issue. That's a whole issue in itself, too. How many kids go on a school bus? They were saying, 10 kids can go on it. That's not going to work. The solution I had for that was, can a group of parents maybe carpool and alternate days? That way the kids are in the car and you only have 2 or 3 kids in the car. However it is that it's going to be done. But you have to sit down and problem solve, and I think that's not what's happening. And yeah, we want them back in the school, but not if it's not safe and not if – it's not sanitary, and if the virus isn't fully gone. I mean, some of the summer camps, from my understanding, had to shut back down because they weren't even wearing masks and they weren't following the social distancing and they weren't doing what they were supposed to be. So that, to me, was a test. They opened the camps too quick. They should have waited at least 3 weeks to put a plan together, but they wanted to open the camps right away when they got the green light. You see, we can't react on impulse. We have to stop, think, take a breath, think it over, write your ideas down, present them,
And then, you know, it's up to us to work together. I think that's the biggest problem in all this is everybody's on a different page. I don't know if you think that's what we're seeing.
Well, that's what we're seeing, and that's what we got to understand. And then the thought process and planning, you know, you prepare to plan to be successful. You don't prepare to plan, you won't be successful. And I like to always tell people, I look at some of these things about camps. Is it really a need just because you need to get them out of your house? See, if we had done this in the right way, like you said, Lisa, it took several weeks to start the summer.
Yeah, plan it out.
Now, but we was in a hurry. I've seen people want to go and boycott because the child wasn't playing AAU basketball or they weren't doing that. We got to get – I understand that, but are we really, really concerned about just – us being no longer in the house ourselves, that we have to do that? Are we concerned about our children's health? Now, I'm putting it at the feet of those individuals because I want them to understand. It is not all about you being out of the house and getting back what you're doing to what you is. It's a new norm now. And your new norm is going to require you to do some things different, which requires you to do more with your children. Right. So I want people to understand. We was in a rush in Georgia. I think it was like 85 or more kids that went to the YMCA camp, they had to shut down. And also, I saw that in somewhere over in St. Louis, over in that area, another camp was shut down.
Yeah.
We're just going to rush to get them back to norm. You see, it is a new norm now. And also, we're on the line now. We have our other co-host. Thank you so much for joining us. Hail from the state of South Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina. Truly, truly, my sister Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated. I have to give that shout out. None other than Scarlett H. Black. How you doing, Scarlett?
Well, Scarlett H. is doing fine. How are you doing tonight? You and Lisa, y'all doing okay?
Hey, Scarlett. Yeah, we're good. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. There's a lot of news going on here today in Greenville, South Carolina. I don't know if you all saw it.
Yeah, I was watching. I was looking at news on that. Also, Dr. O is on the line. She's
hey,
going to be
Dr.
listening. She's listening, so she just said she wanted to listen.
Been missing her.
Yeah, so she's on the line as well. And we was at, and maybe you could see some things that's happening in your area. We're talking about the pros and cons of reopening plans for K-12 schools. Now, we hadn't even talked about the colleges yet. But the higher education system. But we've been talking pretty much about the reopening of a K-12 schools, and even the governor of Missouri said send them to school, herd them on school, let them catch coronavirus, and then they go home. They come back, they don't go to the hospital, they go home. You know, so that puts another burden on the parents. So any parent heard somebody say that, ought to be all over that. But I wanted to share that, but we've just been talking about a plan. A lot of places not having a plan. A lot of state superintendents putting it down on districts to come up with plans. And some states and the governor stepping in and said, I know in Alabama, said you're going to have to make it more as a mandate from that your office instead of putting it in the LEAs. What's your thought, not just on that, but any thoughts in regards to the reopening of schools K-12?
You talking to me?
Yes, Scarlett.
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was trying to get off the phone with one of the school board members. That's why I was late getting on. But I feel like I need to hear that information from her directly. The governor of this state, the state of South Carolina, is a close ally to Trump. And as a result, he mandated, he made a recommendation that the schools go 5 days in person, which is what the mandate that Trump had asked for last week or said last week, that that's what he wanted the schools in America to do. Now, for our listening audience and for most districts in this country, the schools are local. That's your local government, you know, your local concern. He cannot mandate that to any school district in this country. Now, they may think that he can, but he really doesn't have that authority. These are states' rights. Unfortunately, we have governors who are on his bandwagon. So, of course, you know, if he says go jump off the cliff. You know, they'll go jump off the cliff and hope somebody will be down there at the bottom to catch them. But they're still going to jump. So we had one, this one jumped. And anything that comes down, he always will. Because, again, he was one of the first to come out for this man to be president. So anyway, today, it's been a lot of news. And we were on the national news today. The school that was featured on this morning on MSNBC and throughout the day is not far from where I used to go to church, not far from where I live, really. It's about 15 minutes from my house. And it's a beautiful school. It's a magnet school. And they were showing how they would try to social, you know, had two classrooms set up. But again, it's going, you know, it's very difficult to do that. If you worked into a school, worked in a school, or you got your own children, you know how, you know, kids are so excited. They don't think about all this stuff. But anyway, today, $32 million was received in the state of South Carolina. You know where the majority of that money went? Bessie DeVos, who is the Secretary of Education for the United States of America, and you know she's a private school and charter school advocate. All but $12 million will be going to private institutions because they're now saying that if you do not give that money to a private institution, you don't get any at all, pretty much. So that's where the money is going. So that's been the uproar here today because public schools in the state of South Carolina need the money. We got rural areas. I know, you know, you all have heard about the corridor of shame, I-95 coming up through South Carolina from the coastal areas. There was a big documentary about it years ago. You got schools that were built, you know, over 100 years ago in certain areas of this state that are crumbling. And it's unfortunate that, you know, in rural areas where they need the broadband service in order to use technology, you don't have it. And then you also have kids throughout this state that need to have access to technology to do virtual learning. Right. And many of them have not had that. So you're going to give all this money to the private schools and institutions with 5,000 kids. But here in Greenville County, we have 77,000 children. We're the 42nd largest school district in the United States of America. We're the largest school district in the state of South Carolina. You know, so this is what we're dealing with. And whether or not kids should be able to go back to school, this district is going to publish their plan yesterday. But from what I heard a moment ago is that basically it's going to be a hybrid plan where they'll do 1 to 2, no more, maybe 3 days a week. Fridays they'll be not in school. And the rest of the time, when they're not there in person, they will be there virtually, you know, that virtual learning. And we've been threatened that if they don't be there 5 days, the Bessie DeVos was to say it to the governor and to all the governors, I guess, if you don't, we're going to cut your funding off. Well, in the state of South Carolina, no. You can't, you know, the state superintendent here is still elected. I don't think they've changed that yet because one time they were trying to push to have that person appointed by the governor. And thank God she's still elected. And she has told him she will not be doing that to the school districts.
They can't. They can't cut no fun. They can threaten. Yeah, but and I'm reading an article as you were speaking in regards to your superintendent and what it was moving to, exactly what you just shared by broadband, put about $50 million toward improving broadband in the state. And there's a lot of things. And I think the same thing is happening everywhere because our governor also today said about $1, maybe $2 or $3 million being put toward, for example, the concern about our state legislators was about nurses being in school. And she put to hiring more nurses, setting up places in there for where you can put kids at. These guys, buses being put Wi-Fi on, so they'll be around in the district where there may be areas that may not have Wi-Fi. And those are some of the things that occurred and occurred today. I know here it's been working that blend that way anyway. It's been leaning that way anyway. It's been moving toward that way to make sure everybody's covered. But it is a choice they are given. You can go to virtual school for the first 9 weeks, or you can go to face-to-face. They had it where you go 2 or 3 days. It's either one or the other. A lot of parents are opting on and out. But let's think about the challenge that a parent would have. As I read that data in regards to the number of 10 to 19 years who are now carriers for coronavirus, and they're carrying it around and giving it to their family members. So if you put all of them in the big building together, and some systems, I know Macon, which is east to all the way to Auburn, Alabama, they're gonna have 9 weeks. Selma school system gonna have 9 weeks of virtual learning. Montgomery got a choice. They're choosing. Parents are choosing. So some decisions have to be made on our local level to make decisions. And like I see what you all are doing up there in South Carolina, and they're doing the same thing down in Florida. Every state gonna have to make a decision what's best, because your numbers are just skyrocketing. Everybody's numbers are, to a sense. I know they are in Florida and in Alabama. I'm looking at numbers close to 1,600-1,700 people infected per day. That's a lot of people. So those are the kind of things we're talking about, and I had several people. I actually tried to type in. I'm going to read what one of the listeners wrote, and it said that if kids don't feel physically safe and mentally healthy, academic will take a backseat to any and everything else that goes on.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, the parents too, because basically we're spiking here. We're one of those states that have had extreme. Did you see that extreme spikes? All the governors who are, quote, the red states, who did not believe or didn't or believed the hype and disinformation that was coming out. These are the states that are spiking, and we were one of them. Months ago, when we started talking about this on this show, we maybe had 45 cases here. And I think I mentioned to you, or mentioned to one group, that, you know, I've had the husband of sorority sister to come down with that. He survived it, but he was in the hospital for over a month on a ventilator. Had a sorority sister in another chapter here that also had it, and thank God she survived, she and her husband both. So this stuff is no joke.
No, it's not a joke.
And I tell you, as parents got a hard decision to make, because if you know the virus is not curbed, if you know the virus is being hijacked as a political, information, you know, disinformation, political information, and hijacked because of a re-election campaign. You got to think about all this stuff, because as the former Secretary of Education for the United States of America, Arne Duncan, who served under President Obama, said last week, and he didn't miss any words, that this man in the Oval Office does not care about the safety of your children. You know, it's one thing when you're coming after adults. It's another thing when you're coming after children. And as somebody that spent my entire life, pretty much my adult life, in the service of children and making sure kids got what they needed and that they were successful, and that kids who no one thinks could learn how we could move them from point A to point Z, and got kids now who are the first in their families to be college graduates. I know what can be done when you give kids and the funding and the resources that they need to be successful. You give them the encouragement. But to send them back into this kind of environment, parents are going to have to make some very serious choices. But I wouldn't be doing it because, you know, someone is mandating because of a re-election campaign. You know what I'm saying? and they're going to have to get the funds and resources to make sure that these kids on the virtual learning can get what they need if they can't go back. But right now we're spiking, and it's dangerous here.
Exactly.
I mean, the other issue is, guys, when did politicians become doctors? And this should not be a political issue, an illness, a virus that people are getting sick from. I mean, this is like a political circus. Am I right? And I don't even get involved in politics.
And it became bad when the checks and balances on the Oval Office have now become
dysfunctional. You know what? You know what makes me sad? And I don't like to use the word.
You got lawmakers who will not exercise their responsibilities. They have fallen. It's broken. They're scared. They don't want to be bullied. They don't want to be tweeted about. If you got
they
to
don't
be
want
all
to be told
bad, then
wrong,
you don't need the job.
Exactly.
Well, here's the other thing. We're pawns in all this.
Exactly.
I don't like to use
Correct.
The word victims, but we are pawns, and I've been saying that for months. I don't care what your political affiliation is. Like I say, I respect. However, all of us are pawns in all this, and
That's
our
right.
lives, our businesses, our homes is at stake. And when I tell you guys, some days I am on the phone till 10 o'clock at night with a parent or with a kid trying to help somebody to just find some peace or calm down or find that moment. People are scared, and mental health is a huge issue, and they're not even looking at that. I feel like they don't care. These poor kids is like lost, and then I worry about the kids who have mentally ill parents and people who can't get their medications or their health insurance is gone because now they've lost their job. I mean, I don't know if people are thinking, I'm sorry, I'm getting all emotional, but people aren't thinking about these situations. You know, what happens, you lose your job.
I don't think they care. I think there's some really care about it, but when you got people standing out in front of a school board office or the school district office with picket signs, I demand my child be back at school every day of the week. Well, what about the teachers and the staff getting sick? And a lot of these folks here, they ask about the average age. So the average age in this district is between 40 and 45, the average. And then quite a few of them have underlying conditions. Heard about one today that had a transplant. She had to quit. She had to resign from teaching today because of having a transplant, and she cannot go back into that kind of environment, not knowing if she'll get sick. And if she gets sick, you know, she won't be able to survive it.
Scarlett, did you hear that there were teachers writing out wills? They're writing out their wills because they're scared they're going to go back, and some of them have compromised immune systems and, you know, some of them have health issues, and now they're writing out wills if something happens to them. I mean, come on.
Well, quite a few of them
That's
are already resigning and retiring. A lot of retirements and resigning. Some principals also, I heard about one resigning in another place, district, that also resigned. This is stuff you have to think about.
We're going to lose good people.
This is serious because this is dealing with people's health now. This stuff is not a cavalier. On the news today, he said, his quote was, when he was asked about it, I think Chris Wallace interviewed him, and they were playing snippets of the interview, and he made the comment, well, it is what it is. Well, it is not what it is. Try telling somebody who's already lost both of their parents to coronavirus. Try telling that to somebody who's lost a child through coronavirus or a friend or somebody they really loved. No, it's not. It is what it is. It did not have to be this way. And I get fired up, and I am fired up. I'm emotional now because when you start dealing with kids.
Write it down. Don't get too emotional now.
You know, I'm getting emotional now.
You know,
when you start dealing with children,
I got to get the call-in number, so I have to calm you down just a little bit. 347-857-4192. We got to come in and got to get the format moving on. We have to make sure that. I'm going to get you back on in a minute. What we have to make sure we do is try to focus on what we have at hand and just move forward. But we have a couple of things on our agenda we want to address tonight in regards to dealing with parents and some things that we had talked about things as a whole. We want to specifically look at parents because just like we're talking about the situation with school, going back to school, whether you're going to send your child back to school or not, we also want to kind of fit in what mentality, what mindset of those people, as Scarlett mentioned, they're out in front of the school picketing, saying they want their school, their children back in school. Where are we now? We know anxiety have set in. We know fear have set in, stress has set in. How do you want to address those? With what recommendation can we give the listeners as parents, grandparents, or whoever in regards to the children they may be responsible for? What can we share with them in regards to dealing with COVID-19 as a parent? How are we going to deal with our children? What we need to do? What kind of things we have set up for children and strategies that we have to have? And we want to kind of take a minute or two talking about that because that's important because a lot of our listeners, I see them typing in things right now, and they want to kind of hear some things as well. So what is your thoughts in regards to parents and dealing with their children? How are we going to deal with COVID-19, the decision of going back to school? Because it's a tough decision. It is a life and death situation. We have to realize that. What can we recommend they do to kind of smooth this and just work it out with their young people and work it out with family members and those people be coming to them? What's your thoughts on that, team?
I think parents, it's always good to one, have an open line of communication, to validate your child's feelings, whether you agree with them or not. Let them cry. Let them be angry. Work on healthy outlets with them. Explain this in the way I've been explaining this and processing with kids. It's not just about COVID. Like, I've been talking a lot about self-care, self-love. You know, we got to wash our hands. We have to wear the mask, not just for COVID, you know, for other viruses, things in general. I think if we try to make it less scary, but make sure we hone in on the seriousness of this and explain why we're doing all these things, and that's to keep us protected, healthy, and safe. I think implementing, like, health and wellness in the home, exercising, eating right, supplements, have a routine in place is so important. Don't let your kids sleep all day, parents, and talk to them about why we're not going to be on the phone all night and, you know, we're going to get up and, you know, have a routine in the morning and, you know, have structure, just set something up, a different type of routine for right now. And just the thing I keep going to, because I'm so big on mindfulness, is just, this is what we're going to do for today. This is what we're going to do for today. You know, try not to think too far ahead of things, because then that creates more anxiety. And just really, if your child is having a hard time, be supportive, be present. If you feel like you're having a hard time, go outside, depending on the age of the child. If you can just go sit outside for a few minutes, go in your room, put some music on, meditation, check in with your kids. Even have on a normal day, I tell families, have Wednesday be like the check-in day where we talk about what's been going really great in the house. And then maybe go over the things that are concerns or things that we need to change. Just check in with each other. And it's okay as a parent to say, I'm upset, I'm angry, I lost my cool, I'm feeling sad too. Try not to displace your anger or emotions on your child, if that makes sense. You know, we don't want to do things where we create more anxiety, especially for these kids, because they're really struggling. But parents or caretakers at home, make sure that you have a support system, your own therapist,
I know, like I said earlier, I check in with some of my parents, make sure they're okay. Do they need anything? Do they need to talk? It's very important to do these things because this is, you know, this is a very, it's a life-changing event. We don't know when it, how long it's going to go on, and I just try to say let's not focus on how long it's going to go on. But putting these place things in place in the home, I think, is important, and it can be helpful. And something else that is a concern, there's a lot of, like I said before, parents who have their own mental health issues, and they're struggling. They're struggling to try to work, and they're struggling to try to teach their kids and keep their kids occupied. So keep that in mind. If you know someone that you know is having a hard time, like I said before, do a check-in, send an emoji. Do you need anything? Do you need to, you know, let people know you're available to listen. That's the most important thing. Because we don't always have answers for what's going on. Just listen. Be listening and validate and let people just process their feelings and be where they're at. That's
if
my
you're
thought.
Asking the question, what should they do about making a decision for whether to go to let the children go to the in-person or do the virtual? Was that the question you were asking?
Yeah. Yes, that's one of the things.
One of them, yeah.
There was one of them. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, you need to hear what the plan is. You need to first of all see if your state, if your local school district, and I would really follow what your local folks are saying, because they're trying to follow. From what I'm hearing, most of these local districts are really trying to use the CDC guidelines. And they're trying to work it out where most of them, I think, are going for the hybrid situations where you have some days in, some days virtual. If you're not comfortable with that, then you can talk with the school and see what they could work out if you're not comfortable with it. But after you hear what the plan is, ours will be out tomorrow. The actual plan. I've seen the plan, and like I said, it'll have some days in and some days out for those that want to do that. And then if you have questions or you still don't feel safe, you'll be able to talk with the school to see what can be worked out. The thing you also need to see is how the classrooms will be structured. You have that right to ask, may I see how the rooms are going to look? How are you going to do lunch? How are you going to separate them during the lunch period? How are you going to separate them during the day, especially with the little children, because normally we would walk them to the restrooms, you know, and they would stand there in line, and each one would go in at certain periods during the day for the little ones. And in most of the schools, some of the schools, but well, here in Greenville, all of our schools are new. We had a huge building project a couple of years back, so everything is modernized, and those that didn't get modernized got a heavy renovation. So there is some very fine facilities. And in the classrooms, in most of the schools, there are already restrooms inside the school. So you got to see how those procedures are going to work out. Then you need to ask, are you going to be eating lunch inside the classroom? What about the air filtration systems in the room? Will the windows be allowed to be open where you can get fresh air coming in and out? Has the filtration systems been changed to the new filters that will help filter out any virus or whatever in the air so that, you know, it will cut down on someone getting ill? Ask how would the custodial staff handle the cleaning of the rooms and the school building as a whole to make sure that the virus is kept hopefully none at all, but at a minimum for, you know, the most part. These are questions that as a parent, parents, grandparents, you are able and should be able to ask and get clear guidance. And these are for the districts that are given plans. Now, for the ones who still don't know, that's a problem because schools are going to start opening next month in a lot of places around the country. So you know, you need to ask them, first of all, if they don't have a plan, when do you plan to have a plan for parents like myself? What you gonna say, you know, to them when you talk, like myself, you know, when do you plan to have your plan ready for the public to view, for the parents to be able to view? How will you address our questions? How will we be able to filter our questions to you, you know, so we can get some clear cut answers? These are your children that you're talking about. Your most precious treasures, your children. And you need to ask all the questions and be clear. As the questions that you need to ask, write them down ahead of time if you need to or whatever. But make sure you get clear direction and clear answers to them as much as they're able to give you, because even with them, they're still struggling to try to still figure all this out. Then what's going to happen if a child gets ill? How's that going to be handled? Are kids going to be tested with the monitor? The thermometer when they come to school every day?
Yeah,
how many checks will be done? How many checks are going to be done throughout the day? You know, and if my child start having symptoms or whatever, how is that going to be handled with the rest of the kids in the class and the staff, the teacher of that room? Will we all have to quarantine for 14 days? Will we all have to do the testing and the tracing, you know, this type of thing? These are some very serious questions that we never thought, I'm not like Lisa, you never thought that we'd ever have to go hear anything like this, but here it is.
Mm-hmm.
But these are questions that you need to ask. What about the mask? What type of mask will the teachers be able to get the N95 mask like the medical staff wear? What type of PPE will they be able to wear and use? Will children be able to wear
face shields,
PPE,
you know, kids can't keep
masks and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So these are questions that you need to be getting in place now, because next month is around the corner, and but these are questions that you need to be asked, because right now the safety and the health is paramount. Like Lisa said, and I agree with that, because if they can't get that straight, learning is not going to be on their mind. They're going to be trying to stay well and then keep them, you know, involved and keep them, you know, calm about it. But at the same time, somebody has got to be asking some clear-cut questions on how to protect our children. Then you need to think about your home. If you got people in your home, older parents, grandparents or whatever, that normally would be there when they got out of school to take care of them, you might want to switch that up and not put them at risk, if you can, that type of thing, because kids come home with stuff. And every year, you know, I would tell my staff, you know, for you new folks, you know, you're going to build up your immunity, school germs inside the school. You're going to build up your immunity to it. And so I knew the first couple of weeks, the first month or two, that I'd have some folks out, you know, sick with the sniffles or whatever the case may be, because they were trying to get acclimated to what you face inside the school on a daily basis and yearly basis. Every year I knew in October I was going to have problems with my allergies. Never failed. You know, I just knew it. And then I had one little kid come to me and said to me one day, "Miss Black, I am so sick." I said, "Well, honey, what's wrong?" "I don't know, but I sure am sick." You know, so these are things that we deal with. And kids are so excited, they'll just run up to you and hug you and grab you, whatever case may be. And I know social distancing, you got to think about that. That's another question. How will the children be able to social distance when they are in school in person? And particularly those little ones, those little K-4 and K-5 kids in first grade and second, you know, you got to explain it to them. Like Lisa, you got to talk to them, make sure they understand that you just can't hug your teacher like you used to or whatever case it may be, because you got to really understand it. They
exactly.
got to understand it.
Something else I wanted to hit on, because Erica mentioned it. Erica put a comment up about social and emotional learning, and they are implementing that into programs in the schools. We have it in our yoga program, but also what's going on around here, because I'm in a lot of different groups, they're starting co-ops and homeschooling programs. So I do think some of the parents are taking action the right way. They're doing what's best for their kids and their family, and that's what I keep saying. You know, if it's virtual you want to do, you want to put a homeschooling program together, you want to do these co-ops, then that's what should be done. And I think they're taking action in their own way and thinking about, you know, their children and what's best for their kids, because there's so much confusion and there's back and forth. Like, for example, Palm Beach is going to be virtual. And Miami, I thought, was going to be virtual. I'm not sure. And Broward is going back on the hybrid program. But I don't know. That can change. And I think that is causing people so much anxiety of not knowing. And that's why I keep telling parents when they ask me, or people ask me all the time, and I say, you need to do what's best for your family and for your kid. Doing these little homeschooling things, great ideas. These co-ops, like I like the ideas. I'm seeing them in different moms groups. They're really good ideas. But do what's best for you and explain to your kids why we're doing this right now. And I just think it's best that we just do the best we can to explain, because I know there's going to be some kids, when the time comes, they're not going to want to go back to school. They've maybe already had anxiety or now have acquired anxiety. I had someone tell me today about a child who has now become obsessive compulsive because of this. They won't touch things in the house even. And this is, you know, now this has been acquired because of the COVID, you know, because it's scary.
It's scary. Know? The call in number is 857-347-857-4192. Press 1. Make sure we can get you on. I see Dr. Butler, she's typing things in. Lisa answered and responded to a couple of things. She's typing on Facebook. There's other ones letting us know that we are here, and she began to share some things. Even Lisa just shared, you know, don't be scared. And it's the bottom line is we got a situation that brings about that fear that comes as an unknown, and we got to address it. Quickly, I want to kind of move to one other area we had.
Can I just say one more thing, one more tip that they can, that parents can use? You're going to have a lot of retired teachers, and reach out to them. They know the situation. Some may even do. I got several here that work with parents to fill in the gaps from last year. That do it free, and they'll Zoom with that child and take the stress off of parents. Reach out to them and see, particularly elementary school level retired teachers, because they teach all subjects. So they would have that background. They don't, you know, specialize like they would at the middle school and high school. But if your child is struggling in an area, even in specialized areas at the middle and high school level, reach out to those retired teachers or those that are having to resign because of health conditions and see if they will work with your child, take that pressure off the parent by doing so, and Zoom with the kid, you know, your student, your son or daughter, you know, or children, you know, to fill in those gaps.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things that we have. And what happened in March, we were talking about using Zoom, and some of us really wasn't using Zoom as educators. Now we had to use it. So one good thing about, I can say, about what's happening in this part of the country I am in, dealing with the system, the state superintendent brought a plan. He was sent back to come up with a better plan, because our legislators, our parents, our teachers, our AEA, the Alabama Education Association, from the various county and district, had a concern with the plan, so he had to go back and come up with something else. And he included the thing that our legislators want, and I mentioned, asked that the governor spend that part of that $1.9 billion from the CARES Act and $107 million going toward making sure we have enough nurses in school to provide our young people what we need, because some schools don't even have a full-time nurse. And that's not uncommon. I've seen it.
They move them from school.
They don't have counselors
school,
either.
And
no, they
don't
have social workers.
Yeah, We don't really have that in school system, but some schools are being, I know two schools are being innovative enough to bring in someone, a counselor, a general counselor, because your school counselor have enough academically to do that they can't do. So some schools are doing that, but a lot of this money that's been set aside, I'm saying this is a response by this governor after he heard the cry of a constituent. And that's what other governors have to listen to the cry, and don't be so hard like in certain states that I heard today in an interview when he was sitting up here talking about, you know what we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and you got people heckling him in the back. You're going to have to listen to your constituent. But we have to make sure we have a plan put together. Most systems are trying to get it together. It's like building a plane while it's in flight. You got to remember that, because it should have been already planned, but everybody had to that it was going to be going away. It wasn't going to be here. And when the truth of the matter, we knew it was going to be here. So we said some of these leadership sat around and didn't do what they're supposed to do. Now they're rushing, trying to get plans to submitted that probably should have been already in place, where somebody could have looked at them and had it came up and corrected some things. But this is where we are. But I want to address this area, team, because we're down to probably about 15 minutes. Caretakers and caregivers. What kind of impact is COVID-19 on caretakers and caregivers? Now, we'll talk about parents, we talk about children, we talk about schools, those individuals who's taking care of the people who may be disabled, the elderly. What are your thoughts in regards to the caretakers and the caregivers, the impact of the coronavirus on their mental health? We're talking about their mental health. How are they able to be able to address what's going on? You know, they're part of it, because some of them are young people. I can tell you personal, as a person that was a caregiver for my dad. And I know when COVID hit here, it took away a lot in a situation where we couldn't even go where he was used to receiving that lunch and dinner and breakfast service from each one of us. That kind of kept him going. So I'm just saying it was tough on us because we couldn't get in. I can speak personally. I just want y'all's thoughts to see what kind of mental health services or mental health coping things or strategies we can share with people who's caretakers and caregivers at this time for someone in some form.
Well, the American Nurses Association, the American Medical Association are very concerned about the caregivers. They're on the front line, as we all know. They're very concerned about the mental health, and they're encouraging the doctors and the nurses and those that on the front line workers to get help, professional help. And I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago. In the state of New York, Governor Cuomo even called on professional counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists to form a team where anyone in the state could reach out, you know, to them and get help. The thing about with doctors and nurses, and I'll just talk about that real quick, is that oftentimes, you know, just like us, the school people, you know, we're seen as, I guess, I don't want to say, kind of like the solvers of everything. You know, we always want to be the ones that are so strong. We need to get away from that stigma because we feel stress, we feel anxiety, and all the other things that the general public feels too. Most of these people, when they go home, they got to worry about taking care as a caregiver to people there in their home. They got elderly parents, they have children that have compromising situations. So everything that we feel, they feel, and that's why. I think a couple weeks ago, you know, I was talking about taking responsibility while wearing a mask, because we got to be mindful of the people who are right there in the hotbed of it, that we can protect them and that we're not being responsible when we don't do that, because we can lower the number of people coming through the hospitals and coming through the emergency rooms or whatever by doing what we need to do responsibly to keep the virus curve flattened. It helps them. And right now, the hospitals are filling up again. They're having to build makeshift hospitals again. they're run out of PPE again. They can't get, you know, the security and the protection that they need in order to help us. So, yeah, it's tough on everybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Lisa? Have we lost Lisa?
No, I'm here. Hello?
Okay.
I can
hear
you.
Like a delay. Hello?
I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Caretakers, what do we do? Well, one problem is when we talk about mental health or services, a lot of people don't have insurance. A lot of people don't have access to services. The mental health and system is, I don't want to say it's a mess, but I think because of health insurance, it's a mess. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So people are not getting support or services that they need. And that's available. Like, there's case managers that are available, you know, for people with disabilities, for the elderly. There are services out there. I just don't know if people have access or knowledge to it to provide support, you know, so they can get that added support. Because you think about it, sometimes we think we can handle things on our own or handle things in our own home, but you have an elderly parent that's sick, and then you have to go to work, and it's the parent's living with you. Like, you know, there's people I know that are in that situation. That's a lot of stress. And then worrying about bringing it home and people having to quarantine in their own rooms. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. People quarantining, like they go to work, and then they have to quarantine and, you know, take their clothes off, like in the garage before they go in the house. And, you know, it's just erring on the side of caution, but it's a lot of different stressors going on. And then you've got people in facilities that the family can't even see them. You know, they can't go in. You're not allowed in or out. Or what if you get sick and then people don't want to go to the hospital? Maybe they do need a surgery or something is wrong. They can't. They're too afraid. Or say your 80-year-old mother falls, right?
Yeah.
You want to take her to the hospital? It's a risk. Like, these are really big decisions that people have to make. So,
exactly.
Self-care, and that's what I say.
And that's one of the key things, and I'm glad you brought that. Care for yourself. Yeah, the caretaker, caregiver. You care for yourself. And that's one of the things, you know, we have to de-stress ourselves, do something to kind of bring it down. If you're not taking care of yourself, you can't caretake or be a caregiver for anybody else. And one of the biggest concerns we have, and you have to stay emotionally connected as a caregiver, caretaker, parent, whoever it may be, you got to stay emotionally connected. We can't step away and get too much out of control because of the stress, start screaming and hollering and just all mm-hmm. over the place. We have to stay connected emotionally. We have to do that. And that's when we act caretakers, because some of them, not only is they working as in the hospital, they may be coming to someone's home, an elderly person's home, a disabled person's home, and they seeing this, and they got to make sure they're protected and that person they are working with, who's their mm-hmm. caregiver, caretaker for, is taking care of the soul, because they're in the high-risk area. So those are the kind of things that we have to make sure. We all have to prioritize, make sure we make sure our self-care is
yeah.
Try to make sure we get it where we it's a priority to us, okay? We got to make sure self-care. We talk about everybody else. Make sure you exercise. Make sure you eat. Make sure you sleep. Same thing applies to caretakers and caregivers. Prioritize whatever you have to do. Make sure you have to do it last. When you're dealing with children, you have to make sure dealing with them so they can de-stress, and you're a caretaker for a child, sit down mm-hmm. again and communicate with them. Reassure them, you know, to the point that if we do this and be responsible as we've been talking about, everything can change and maybe get back to where it used to be or where new normalcy, whatever. It's going to be something new. It won't be the same. We can't even understand the reason for the mask, talk to the mask. And all of this is something we're talking about when we're dealing with children as a caretaker. We're talking about adults as a caretaker. You know, just working with individuals. These are some of the things. We got about 7 minutes, and I want you to share about 1 minute of thought in regards to that. And I want to give a shout-out to all our people that's joining us tonight as well, so we can do like we always do.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'll be very honest. I'm really tired of the mask debate. We've been talking about this mask, not us talking about it, but across the country. Every news show you hear, everything you listen to, it's about the mask, the mask, the mask. We know the mask work. We know that. New York has shown that, and some other in New Jersey, places like that, they had the curve flattened after being some of the most devastating states at first, initially. We've heard from Dr. Fauci. We've heard from the CDC when they're not silenced or whatever. So we know that. But there are just some people who are just so mean-spirited or whatever case may be, or just it's all about me and my comfort. There's a difference between being comfortable and being threatened, so to speak, about your comfort and feeling threatened. We know the mask work. If all of us were wearing the mask and had from the very beginning, things would be a lot better now that we could reopen and get the economy back, like you said, Doc, a new normal. You know, it won't ever be the same for right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen. It's still not happening. And it it's very disheartening when you see people protesting wearing a mask or going in and tearing up a store because it didn't have a mask. I saw the day a man went into Walmart, and the man was trying to tell him that they had a mask policy, that they had to wear the mask. Well, he knocked the man down, you know. So this stuff is just common sense stuff, really, and things that we could do as Americans to protect ourselves, and we just continue to refuse to do it.
Exactly. Awesome. All right, Lisa.
Hello?
You still there?
Yeah,
I'm here. I keep getting
here?
Like a stop, like it's a pause or something. Be mindful. Maybe I should do a mindfulness. Can I do a meditation next week?
Yeah.
We start the show off. Scarlett, I had my Captain America mask. So if I was going on live, I was going to wear
Captain
my mask.
You got your Captain America mask.
I have a Captain America mask. I love superheroes, so I do superheroes in yoga class. So.
Well, I got a green one. It's Humana.
Humana.
Awesome.
We should have, my kids want a tie-dye masks and give them out to people. Isn't that cute? The kids were like, maybe if we make them and tie-dye them, we can hand them out to people that don't want to wear them. And my kids are so cute, the kids I work with. They're really great. They have the best ideas.
Well, I'll do Batwoman.
Batwoman.
Catwoman.
We're going to have to wrap it up. I want to give a shout-out to the individuals joining us on Facebook. We're having a ball. But let's make sure.
I'm
going to
order you one.
We have Charlie's Angels. We want to make sure we give her a shout-out because she's a part of it. This shout being here a part of the show. Queen Minister Lewis, who's one of the hosts of one of the shows on Thursday at 8 o'clock. We also have Dr. Butler, John Erica Butler. She's been
Are you still there?
I'm here. Are you there, Scarlett? Are we on?
Did he go out?
He went out. Dr. Lowe. I'm going to order you a Catwoman mask.
Yeah, give me a Catwoman.
Why not have fun with that?
You got that right. I got about six different masks.
Now
he went out for real,
four.
Didn't he?
He did. He cut us off, darling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. I was supposed to go on live. I did go with something with the ball. I don't know.
Doc,
oh, they have cute
Catwoman. We can't hear anything.
We can't hear
from you.
They do have cute Catwoman now.
I like the Catwoman. I'll Catwoman in black.
They're cute. There's one with a whip.
I know he kept going in and out there for a little bit. So
I was. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because you. I think you're on a pause, a delay.
I think so. I'm not sure how we fix it.
That's what I don't like about Zoom, for one thing, the delay, because sometimes you can't really know how long to wait.
Is there a different way we can do this? I don't like Zoom myself.
Mm-mm.
I wonder if there's a different way that he can go on.
Mm-mm.
There has to be.
He's really gone.
Yeah, he's gone. Does he know we're gone?
I don't know. Let me email him.
Conversation. If we could talk about him, he would not know.
He would give us some shout outs.
I can't even hear. I don't have it.
I can't hear him at all.
No. Is he on the text still?
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
Can you hear us? Well, we have to make some joke or we'll lose our mind.
That's what keeps me going. You have to find some humor.
Some humor in this.
You know, sometimes.
It's draining.
But it just draws a line when it comes to children, though. That really,
I know. I have a couple kids I see, like, out in my yard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, she just sat holding my little dog. It broke my heart. I didn't say a word. She was just so heartbroken that there was no school.
Mm-hmm.
She was heartbroken, and... Yeah, it just...
It's really, you know, and this is going to go on for a while, but you know what I'm really worried about is the first child that gets sick and doesn't survive, or the first teacher.
What they're going to,
I've had, in my career, I had 4 children.
I have the pleasure to present to this great audience young John Lewis, National Chairman, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Brother John Lewis.
Today for job and freedom. But we have nothing to be proud of, for hundreds and thousands of our brothers are not here, for they're receiving starvation wages or no wages at all. While we stand here, there are sharecroppers in the Delta of Mississippi who are out in the field working for less than $3 a day, 12 hours a day. While we stand here, there are students in jail on trump-up charges. Our brother James Farmer, along with many others, is also in jail. We come here today with a great sense of misgiving. It is true that we support the administration's civil rights bill. We support it with great reservation, however. Unless Title III is put in this bill, there's nothing to protect the young children and old women who must face police dogs and fire hoses in the South while they engage in peaceful demonstrations. In its present form, this bill will not protect the citizen of Danville, Virginia, who must live in constant fear of a police state. It will not protect the hundreds and thousands of people who have been arrested upon Trump charges. What about the 3 young men, Snickfield's secretary in America's Georgia, who faced the death penalty for engaging in peaceful protest? As it stands now, the voting section of this bill will not help the thousands of black people who want to vote. It will not help the citizens of Mississippi, of Alabama, and Georgia, who are qualified to vote but lack a sixth grade education. One man, one vote is an African cry It is our tomb. It must be ours. We must have legislation that will protect the Mississippi sharecropper, who is put off of his farm because he dares to register to vote. We need a bill that will provide for the homeless and starving people of this nation. We need a bill that will ensure the equality of a maid who earns $5 a week in a home of a family whose total income is $100,000 a year. We must have a good FEPC bill. My friends, let us not forget that we are involved in a serious social revolution. But by and large, American politics is dominated by politicians who build their career on immoral compromising and allow themselves an open form of political, economic, and social exploitation. There are exceptions, of course. We salute those. But what political leader can stand up and say, my party is a party of principles? For the party of Kennedy is also the party of Eastland. The party of Javis is also the party of Goldwater. Where is our party? Where is the political party that will make it unnecessary to march on Washington? Where is the political party that will make it unnecessary to march in the streets of Birmingham? Where is the political party that will protect the citizens of Albany, Georgia? Do you know that in Albany, Georgia, 9 of our leaders have been indicted not by the Dixiecrats, but by the federal government for peaceful protests? But what did the federal government do when Albany Deputy Sheriff beat Attorney C.B. Kane and left him half dead? What did the federal government do when local police official kicked and assaulted the pregnant wife of Slater King and she lost her baby? Those who have said be patient and wait, we must say that we cannot be patient. We do not want our freedom gradually, but we want to be free now. We are tired. We are tired of being beaten by policemen. We are tired of seeing our people locked up in jail over and over again. And then you holler, be patient. How long can we be patient? We want our freedom and we want it now. We do not want to go to jail, but we will go to jail if this is a price we must pay for love, brotherhood, and true peace. I appeal to all of you to get in this great revolution that is sweeping this nation. Get in and stay in the streets of every city, every village, and hamlet of this nation until true freedom comes, until the revolution of 1776 is complete. We must get in this revolution and complete the revolution. For in the Delta of Mississippi, in Southwest Georgia, in the Black Belt of Alabama, in Harlem, in Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, and all over this nation, the black masses are on the march for Georgia and freedom. They're talking about slow down and stop. We will not stop. All of the forces of Eastland, Barnett, Wallace, and Thurman will not stop this revolution. If we do not get meaningful legislation out of this Congress, the time will come when we will not confine our marching to Washington. We will march through the South, through the streets of Jackson, through the streets of Danville, through the streets of Cambridge, through the streets of Birmingham. But we will march with the spirit of love and with the spirit of dignity that we have shown here today. By the forces of our demand, our determination, and our numbers, we shall splinter the segregated South into 1,000 pieces and put them together in the image of God and democracy. We must say, wake up, America, wake up! For we cannot stop, and we will not and cannot be patient.